Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back to All the Smoke. Jack, what's happening?
You know,
good?
Yeah.
I like them.
No, give me my props. My hands ain't clammy. Whatever y'all call them. Yeah. Clammy, whatever that shit is. My shit dry today.
Yeah, you got your pH balance right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm hydrated. Good,
I like your shoes and your sweatshirt, though.
Appreciate it, bro.
You on one today.
Appreciate it, bro.
Man, we back, man. Season 3. It's good to be back. We back rolling. We back in L.A. We got family in the building today, man.
Last name.
One of our homies, my old next door neighbor, current Los Angeles Ram, Deshaun Jackson.
What's welcome up, to the big show, bro.
Man, I appreciate y'all having me.
Yes, sir, about time.
Appreciate you finding time. I mean, you're back home.
Yeah.
LA Rams. I mean, you're going into your 14th season.
Yeah, 14.
14 deep.
We both play 14.
Right. Yep. And you're playing at home. Talk to us about that.
Man, for me, it's like everything come back full circle, you know, to be in the NFL, to come from Los Angeles, California, born and raised, to play Pop Warner, to grow up in a sports city, never really been able to play at home.
Right.
You know, I done played 13 years in the NFL, and every time it's time to go to season, I got to go to the East Coast, Philly, yeah. Tampa, Washington. So for me, this time back around is special, man, and it mean a little more, man.
But talk to us about, because we talked off air, yeah. I got a chance to play at home. You never got a chance to play at home, right?
It's close, but not home.
How you got to kind of change your home mentality? Because you're older now. You know what I mean? You're on your last, you know, handful of years, you know, God willing. You know, obviously aspirations and goals to test that Hall of Fame, which you're on pace to. Talk to the fans about how you kind of had to come back to L.A., but also, you know, keep that focus.
Well, first off, when I first came back, when I realized I was coming back home, because I kind of knew before, got a great relationship with Sean McVay, so... you know, when I found out I was coming back home, the first thing I did was change the phone number. Change both numbers right away. I'm like, I'm going back home. It's Hollywood.
Right.
You know, the hood. You know, I go hang out with the homies. I'm like, the first thing I'm doing is changing my number. So I remember Sean McVay actually, like the next day, I signed. And then he hit me like, damn, I can't even get a hold of you. I'm like, yeah, coach, I had to change the number. He's like, man, that's that serious, son. But for me, like coming back home, you know, I'm 34 years old, you know, going to 14th year. So for me, like, you know, I know these last few years, I got a real mm-hmm. shot at, you know, solidifying the Hall of Fame spot. And for me, you know, being able to be one of the biggest deep threats ever, you know, passing Jerry Rice.
Randy Moss.
Randy Moss, you get what mm-hmm. I'm saying? So for me, growing up, like, that's what I had inspiring me, you know. And for me to be in them same conversations with them type of dudes, like, I had to come back and let people know that I'm not here to party. I'm not here to be at One Oak and, like, no, I'm here to do my thing on the field and win a Super Bowl, bro. That's my main focus. So I had to, you know, solidify that first.
I mean, that kind of leads us into our next question. I mean, you have a team that has a chance to win a ring.
100%.
You know what I mean? And you're back at home on top of that. So talk to us what that atmosphere has been like. You know, teaming up with Matthew Stafford, you guys got a loaded defense.
Yeah.
What's that environment been like?
Man, honestly, you know, I done played on some good teams. Going back to the year 2010 with Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, mm-hmm. Jerry Mack. Like, we had some dogs back in Philly. But, I mean, to fast forward everything right now, 2021, like you said, Aaron Donald, Jalen mm-hmm. Ramsey. Like, I'm playing with some dogs. Like, legitimately top best players in the league right
now.
Future,
you know,
Aaron
Donald, what, he was the number 2 overall player. Jalen Ramsey, I think, was 13th in the top 100. So, for me to be on this team, man, like, I knew stepping in, like, we really got a shot to win the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl here in L.A. Mm. But, you know, we don't want to peak too soon. It's a long season.
Right,
bro.
Right.
Y'all Cowboys doing good. Green Bay, it's a lot of good teams. But we know, you know, if we just keep our head down, chin up mentality, and keep working every day, if we look at every week like we want to go, we 0-0 trying to go 1-0 at the end of the season, I mm-hmm. think, you know, that'll have a stand in the last one.
You mentioned Coach McVay. You had a prior relationship with him. Speak to how you guys' relationship started.
Man, back in, what was that, 2014, I remember when, so in 2013, I got released by the Philadelphia Eagles. Everybody, you know, who knows me knows about that situation. And, you know, I had a chance to go to a few teams, but it was personal. I had to stay in that division, NFC East. Like, I'm like, Eagles just cut me. Like, there's only a few teams I really wanted to go to. So I'm like, Washington was the team Jay, you had Jay Gruden, you had Sean McVay, who was, you know, Jay Gruden was the head coach, Sean McVay was the offensive coordinator. So right when they realized I was a free agent, they like, we got to figure out a way to get this little motherfucker on our team. Like, whatever we got to do, we've been seeing him torch us for years, you know, right. Just playing Washington and, you know, for doing all that. So our relationship really started early, man. Like, going back to 2014, I played 3 years in Washington. And, like, I think out of the 3 years I played there, 2 years, I went over 1,000 yards, had, like, 9 touchdowns, like, 60. Like, we was balling, you know. So, flip side, to come back now and seeing this progress, like, the dude is a genius, bro. Mm-hmm. I really look at him, like, on the Bill Belichick, Andy Reid. Like, he has the smarts, and the way he puts his players in positions to always beat the defense, bro, it's like he a goat for what he do.
Mm-hmm. How was it growing up in the Crenshaw neighborhood of L.A.?
Man, rest in peace, Nip, neighborhood Nip, man. You know, for me, I think it kind of instilled, you know, that greatness, that, like, that competitive nature. You get what I'm saying? Like, we really didn't have no hope. We ain't really, you know, we had dreams and desires, but we ain't really, it was only certain few influences we really had to look up to. You get what I'm saying?
Positive.
And, yeah, on some positive. Like, you know, you going to the store, you know, those dudes at the corner store hanging out, gang banging, selling drugs. You get what I'm saying? So, on a daily basis, you know, I was lucky and fortunate to have a pops around me that, like, seen, you know, that side of it. And he like, nah, I'm going to take your little, we going to football, basketball, track, like, everything, every sport. Because he knew if I was sitting at the crib or at home, what I would be getting into. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, I think it just installed me to just go out there and want to be different. Like, it was something about looking at the OGs, looking up to them, like, man, I want to do that. But it's like, I really wanted to do it the positive way, where I could go be on television, where I could, all my dudes back in the hood see me, Deshaun Jackson, on national television. I'm repping for my city and where my hood is, you know? So for me, that's what made me inspired and really wanted to go out there and do good for my city.
So you could say that the love for sports came from your parents or from you. You attended Beach Polytech High School.
Yeah.
Played baseball, ran track. The love of sports come from, was instilled from your pops, or just something you picked up?
I think it come hand in hand. You know, my pops grew up Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and when he grew up, he wasn't really able to play sports. Mm-hmm. You know, his pops worked in the steel mill. He like, we work around here. Mm-hmm. Like, ain't no sports. You not doing none of that shit. So my pops never really was able to live out his dream because he loved sports, you know? So he was like, shit, I'm going to have kids, and I'm pushing all my kids to play sports. Like, shit, if I couldn't make it, I'm finna have kids, and one of these little niggas making it to the NFL, you know, which in reality was my older brother at first. And then, you know, that wasn't really his dream or desire. So then you got me, this little kid. I'm like, shit, I was a majority around my pops the most out of all, you know, our siblings. So for me, I just installed, like, just growing up and just, like I say, just being competitive in the streets, playing sideline pop, throw up tackle. Like, yeah. I was just one of the little fastest, hardest dudes, and I was the toughest. I was the littlest one, but the toughest one. So I was like, man, you know, it installed me at an early age to be great, bro.
Mm-hmm. You was a major league prospect. What position in baseball did you play? A lot of people don't know that, though.
Man, yeah, so that's an interesting story, too. So my pops, he actually loved baseball. So this is the story about the baseball. So my pops loved baseball, and he like, I'm taking you to do all these sports. You basketball, football, you run a track, you doing all, you got to play baseball for me. So it was like, he almost like forced me to play baseball. So I was good at baseball, but I ain't really had a love for it. Like, I love playing football. I love doing everything else. So for me, I was real good at baseball, but I just didn't have that love for it. But looking back at it now, I'm like, if I could do it all over, I probably would have did the baseball, right? They get 300 guaranteed. Like, I'm like, man. But, you know, everything happened for a reason, bro. Right. But, yeah, I was actually a hell of a baseball player.
What position you play?
I played center field, second base. Speed. I play everything. I used to be, like, left fielder, right fielder, don't go in the gap. Like, anything hitting the gap, I'm running everything down, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, for real.
You mentioned Nip earlier. What was your relationship with him like?
Man, Nip, man. So, I remember back in probably, like, 2001, like, I think I was a freshman in high school, and, you know, growing up in Leimert Park, you know, Crenshaw and Slauson was literally 10, 15 blocks down the street, so, you know, going up, Crenshaw, Audubon, like, I used to know Nip, like, we were probably, like, 13, 14 years old, but back then, Nip was just a pretty boy, curly hair, he ain't had a long hair back then, he had the curly hair, he was just, always had the white long tee on, you know, back then, the pro club, everybody wearing
5X,
you feel me, so it's just like, just knowing Nip back then, he was just, like, the little player, like, pretty boy dude, you know, and then it's like, I remember, like, around high school, he started rapping, and I'm like, damn, he rapping, all right? Trying to figure out if he hard or not. So, you know, back then, really nobody really knew about him. Then, you know, he got to Slauson boys. Then you just start seeing him out on Crenshaw and Slauson, out the back of the Benz, trunk, popping the trunk, giving out CDs. Like, I'm like, man, this nigga really taking this shit serious. So, for me, I saw his work. I saw what he put into it, and to look up to, you know, what he did, inspired everybody, and just how he tried to, you know, provide jobs and just, you know, changing the community, man. Like, me and Nip go back, bro, but, you know, he definitely inspired for the Crenshaw community, man. Mm,
rest in peace. Rest in peace. Yeah. High school football, 60 catches, over 1,000 yards, 15 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. What was it like out there playing in high school? Man, like them Friday night games. Yeah,
first of all, shit. I mean, high school, like Long Beach, probably went to the number one high school in all of America. Like, literally, probably put the most people in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So, growing up, obviously, I'm not from Long Beach. Everybody think I'm from Long Beach, but I'm not from Long Beach. So, I grew up, like you said, Crenshaw, South Central. And as a eighth grade, I'm trying to figure out, like, man, what high school I'm going to go to? Now, my pops, he was, like, the biggest scout of America. Like, he already had deals and broke it in with this high school coach. He going to Venice. He going to Crenshaw. He going to Dorsey. Now, he going to Westchester. So, I'm sitting back, like, trying to really figure out what high school I'm going to go to. And then my older brother was like, if you really want to go to the best high school, and you know for a fact they gonna have scholars, like they gonna have scholars, they gonna have coaches coming in, like the best of the best. You're like, we going to Long Beach Poly. So I'm like thinking about it, I'm like, all right, shit, let's go. But when I went, literally we had Herschel Dennis, Darnell Bing, Mercedes Lewis, man, you're right. Like, it was literally like seven dudes that was going to Division I. Like, all had top scholarships from SC, UCLA. So I was a freshman going into that. So I'm like, shit, all I got to do is, even if I'm halfway decent, I'm going to go get a Division I scholarship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, coming out there from LA and being one of the best to play Pop Warner and come to Poly, like, I already had to earn that. You get what I'm saying? Because it was really dogs. Like, Long Beach Poly, like, I'm telling you, they the best of the best. So, for me to come all the way from LA and come to Poly, like, I already came from outside in and was, like, really an insider. You feel what I'm saying? So, it was fun, man. It was big games, though. Like, I was prepared to play on a big level. Right. Being early at Poly, because once I got to college, that shit was like, it was next.
He was
what's
used
next?
To it.
Yeah, like right. NFL, what's next? Like, I'm killing that shit just because the mentality and being around people that was like really good at it.
I mean, you topped your high school career off with the MVP of the All American game. Who was recruiting you and why did you end up going to Cal?
Man, I had shit. I had all the schools, Florida State, the Miamis, the Oklahomas, the LSUs, like, I had probably over 100 plus offers, and you know, I was close to going to LSU. That was Nick Saban was there, man. There was something about that culture out there, man. That food and women, like, I'm like, man, the South got me. Louisiana had
me. How many
me.
Trips did you take? I not to cut you off.
I think four trips. I went to Oklahoma, went to LSU, and it was like I said, when I went to LSU, it was just something about like just how they treated me, the food, and I'm like, man, it's something about that South, you know? Like, I'm like, I almost had it, but then Nick Saban ended up leaving, and he went to the Miami Dolphins. So when he left, I'm like, man, that's out. And then I had SC. I committed. I was a year SC one. They who they had? Reggie Bush, Lindell White. They just had won the national championship, and I remember they called me after the game. Had Pete Carroll in there. It was all hype on the bus, turned up, like, yeah, you coming? I'm like, yeah, I'm coming, I'm committed. So I commit, and then I just felt like, man, they was like giving these dudes from out of state, like, extra, like I wanted number one, and they ain't give me number one. So I'm like, they started, like, showing dudes out of state more love than they showing interstate, because they was like, oh, Poly dudes used to going to SC, we're going to take it for granted, like, he coming here. So I'm like, you know what, I'm shaking. And the year before that, Cal just beat SC when they had Marshawn Lynch, Aaron Rodgers, they beat him in the Coliseum, an upset. I'm like, you know what? Instead of joining the best, I'm going to go somewhere and beat the best. And that was just the mentality I had. Like, I ain't want to just be labeled as somebody that just went there just because they thought they had me in their backseat. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that was my decision on that.
What was your record against SC?
Man, don't do that. I was 0-3, but hey, look,
how did you do?
Every time we played them, they had like three dudes on me. They was like, we not letting this little dude kill us. But now I had some good games versus them. Obviously, I was a vocal point when I played against them, and they definitely was like, yeah, we ain't gonna let him ball. Mm-hmm. So I did cool though, but yeah, we was 0-3. It hurt.
Did Aaron Rodgers was recruiting you too, or kind of the guys that showed you
a little bit? He did, man, and like So Aaron Rodgers was a junior when I was a freshman, or no, he was a junior when I was a senior in high school. So when I'm coming there, you know, I'm like, shit, Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks in college football. I'm like, I'm going there. So the minute I commit, he enters the NFL and leaves. So he left his junior year. So right. I came in and he wasn't even there no more. But, you know, we had, like I said, we had Marshawn Lynch, Justin Forsett. We had some good dudes.
Can you imagine, though, Aaron, Marshawn all on the same team? We could have won a national championship.
Yeah, we'd have won the Natty that year. Because that next year, we was actually like, we was number two in the nation. And we ended up losing to freaking like Oregon State or some crazy fluke shit. But, man, yeah, I would think about that shit. I'm like, damn, just imagine if he'd have stayed and we'd have played like a full year together. It would have been special. Scary.
You was number two at Cal?
We was the highest ranked. We was number two. We started like 5-0. We was on college game day. We played Oregon at Oregon. I went crazy. I had like 3 touchdowns, like 180 yards. Like, I went crazy. So I remember that game. I came up. You know, they do the broadcast thing after the game and bring me up. I had a big ass suit on. That was back in the day when, you know, we wore
Steve Harvey's.
Yeah, we wore our suits big and shit. I'm on there talking and shit. But it was like, man, we went on a downhill after that. We lost like the next like 4 games, bro. But we was number two of the nation, bro.
At one point, it just went downhill. if I'm not mistaken, that was during the We Believe time too, right?
Yeah.
You was out there while was rocking
for sure.
Right over the way. Yeah, because I remember definitely. I checked one of you guys' games out one time.
Yeah, that was a big game, man.
Were you guys able to get out to any of those games, or you watch them on TV, or what was it like during your college experience out there?
Nah, it was definitely big. For us looking up to y'all, man, which I used to do back in Golden State, like, man, y'all was really like a culture, man. Like, you know, BD, obviously, respect, you know, shout out big bro BD. Bro was there. I mean, you know, y'all had a wave out there, man. And for us, like, y'all the culture, bro. I'm not even gonna sit here and act like it ain't big, like what y'all did and how y'all carried y'all game and just like what y'all meant for the culture, bro. Like, we all looked up to that. You know, me, like, growing up, I'm a smaller dude, so the guys that I really looked up to is the Michael Vicks, the Allen Iversons, you know, the Kobe's, the dudes your child all respected and respected you, vice versa. So that mentality, man, like, it's much respect to what y'all doing and continuously still doing, how y'all tapped in with the youth and, you know, your boys, your twins, you know, I respect everything you're doing with them. Mm-hmm. I love to see it, bro, because it give me something to look up to when I'm done playing ball, you know?
Appreciate that. Yeah, for sure. What was your relationship like with Marshawn?
Marshawn, so it's an interesting story about Marshawn. So obviously Marshawn, Oakland Tech, Oakland, California.
Oakland to the fullest.
Yeah. To the full, you know, North Oakland, family first, you know, shout out my brother. But so coming from LA, you know, LA is a little, as I ain't gonna say a little, it's a lot different than the Bay Area. So, you know, me growing up, you got gangs, you got Bloods, you got Cribs, you know, you got different sets. So for me growing up in the LA culture, going to Cal, at first I didn't understand what was going on, because you got dudes saying blood and cousin one sentence. It's like, do they know they basically saying you blood and you Crip in the same sentence? But they don't even care. They just talking. So it's like they culture out there is just total different. It's like, and they not even in tune. Like, they're literally, you don't even think they from California, bro, out there. Because they not even in tune with the LA culture, bro. They got their own culture. So for me, I'm like, Marshawn was just himself, bro. Like, he didn't really care. Like, he was street, but he was smart. Like, he was intelligent. You know, he did good in school. Like, a lot of people don't know how good he did in school. Like, he damn near was graduated before he left Cal. Mm. You get what I'm saying? So the respect level, me and him, I remember I was a freshman and he was a sophomore. And I came in, I was one of the fastest on the team. And he looking at me, he like, who this little nigga think? He's that nigga lined up, nigga, let's race. I'm like, this big boy, he about 220, 6 feet. Like, he looking at me like, really, like, nigga, let's race. So I'm like, you sure you want to race? You know, I'm cocky, young nigga. I'm like, you sure you want to race? He like, yeah, lined up. And we got out there, we raced. I beat him, but he put up a fight, though. Yeah. He wasn't slow. Marshawn wasn't slow. But I'm like, it just gave me a respect for Brett different, because he knew I was faster than him, but he was like, lined up.
He wanted to get out there anyway.
Yeah, bro. So it's like, much respect to money, man. He a good dude, bro. Yeah.
So, decorated college career. One of the top receivers in the country. You make your jump to the league, second round pick. Did you have a chip on your shoulder?
For sure. And the reason why I say I had a chip, it's like, all right, for me, college, right? You like every step of the way from high school, college, like, I always been the best, always been, you know, stashed there, proven. Everything was proven for me. So coming out my junior year, I actually put in a little note. And they was like, it came back and it was like, guaranteed. They didn't say guaranteed, but they give you a projection.
Mm-hmm.
So they said anywhere from first round to like the end of first round. So like the first pick to the 25th pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, shit, all right, I'm gone. I ain't no point in going coming back to college for my senior year when they already solidified that. So I'm like, I'm gone. So I enter in the NFL. And I remember back then my coach, it was Jeff Tefford at the time, had like a little personal relationship with, you know, him and my dad like had like a little beef. And my pops used to be cussing me out after the game. Like, if my son don't get 10 catches, 200 yards, then I'm cussing you out after the game. So pops was turned up after every game. You know, pops drinking, turned up. I ain't had the game he wanted me to have. Coach hearing about it. So I feel like that kind of hurt me going into the league because, you know, Jeff Tefford was kind of asked about certain situations. And he was like, yeah, I think his dad could be a problem. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was like that kind of hurt my draft status, you know. And I took it personal because all the teams that passed on me, that first year when I was in Philadelphia, every team that passed on me, I made them pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first year, we went to the NFC Conference Championship game where I thought I scored to win a touchdown. We going to the Super Bowl, but Larry Fitzgerald came down, did some crazy. Mm-hmm. That was the year the Steelers played Arizona in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was my rookie year, bro, and it was lit, man.
Mm.
It was lit.
What's it like stepping on that stage, though? I mean, you all about 5'9"?
Oh yeah, my 5'10". I mean, give me my 5'10". Probably, I mean, 6 feet with shoes.
Shit.
5'10", what you weigh?
Right now I'm like 185.
185.
But when I first came in, I was 169.
Ooh.
Like, they gave me, they was like 5'9", whatever, like 7 core, whatever it was.
I'd like, you're like 5'10". The average height of an average man.
Yeah.
And to think that Jack made a joke, like would you say NBA years in the NFL? For your size, though, like, yeah, no one,
that's,
I mean,
impressive.
Really, really hats, sure, off to you, bro. I mean, obviously, we homies, and I think people kind of take that shit for granted, but for you to accomplish, and you're not done, but for you to make it 14 years in the league at your size, that says a lot about you, man. No, says a lot
it,
about
it,
you.
It definitely does, and I appreciate that, but, you know, I just take it back to my mentality, just growing up, how I grew up, having the pops around me, you know, that really just didn't really care about anything. Like, if I wanted to envision myself or I wanted to do something, I'm going to do it. And that's just been my mentality the whole time. And obviously, I ain't the biggest, but every time I step on the field, I feel like I'm the biggest.
Giant,
you know what,
right,
I'm saying? Like, I feel like I'm lion-hearted. And it's like, I don't care how big you is. I don't care. My pop said, never fear, man, regardless how big, how small, he put his pants on just like you. You feel,
right,
what I'm saying? So, for me, that's just always been my mentality, bro. But, I definitely speaks numbers, and like you said, I'm still not done, still playing at a high level, and you know, I take pride in this shit. Every time I wake up, every time I step on the field, bro, I want to be the best doing it, you know, and I am who I am for a reason, because that's that mentality, you know, it's just like that mama mentality, you know.
Facts.
Y'all played against him, y'all know.
Mm-hmm.
21 way.
What did being stamped by Jerry Rice when he said he had this kid has all the talent in the world, what did that mean for you, for arguably be the greatest receiver of all time to stamp you like that?
Yeah, that was a special moment because that was before I even played the NFL game. Like, I had opportunity because at the time, my agency that I was signed with, he was signed to him as well, too. So I had a chance to work out with him, and we ran routes. He was like, I want you to run every route. Like, I ran literally every route from route one to the go route. And he was like, I only got one route I want to work with you on. I'm like, I just ran like 20 routes. And you telling me just one route? So I'm interested to what he going to say. He was like, you just running too fast on a speed out. I want you to slow it down, get under control, and you master that, ain't nobody going to be able to mess with you. So from day one, I'm like, I'm thinking he finna critique me. I'm thinking he finna give me
What route is that?
A speed out. It's like a quick out, 5 yard out.
Okay.
But he was saying, I'm so fast, I need to run that in under control and still be fast, but not running too fast where I'm like out of control running a route. So that route is like one of the easiest routes. So that was the only route he critiqued me on. So I'm like, I could be special, bro. And I knew that from day one. I'm like, I do my shit and stay on it and work. Yeah, it's going to be a good ride.
What's the fastest time you ever ran?
In the
period. 40, yeah.
40. The fastest time I ran before, I was in college. I want to say like my junior year, I ran a 4.24.
God damn. That's that Deion speed.
Talk about your rookie experience.
When I came in, I just had that mentality, like, I didn't really care who the starting receiver was. Like, I'm coming in, I'm taking somebody's spot.
Point blank.
Like, that's me coming in. Sometimes these young dudes, they come in, they be asking questions. I'm like, bro, you can't make the game bigger than it is. We've been playing this shit since a little kid in the park. Just how I'm sure it is for basketball.
Right.
Like, once you got to the NBA, you can't be like, oh my God, the lights and all these fans screaming. Nah, we got to tune in and play ball.
Right.
So me, I had the mentality was the game ain't gonna be bigger than it is. It's still football. And I think these young dudes come in, they be like a deer in the headlights because they don't understand, like, it's still football. It's still basketball. It's a sport. It's a game that we love growing up. But don't make it bigger. If you make it bigger than it is, then you're going to always be behind the eight ball trying to figure out, damn, how can I make the game not as big as it is?
Right.
Like, no, I'm the game. I'm the moment that's big. And that's my philosophy on that shit, bro. It's nuts. It's a game, bro. We have fun with this shit and play at a high level.
Talk to him.
For sure.
Who were your vets that you leaned on in rookie year? As soon as you got in the league.
Good question, man. So when I came in, I had some real OGs, man. I'm going to give you the names first, and I'm going to give you a special story about a situation in my rookie year. But so I came in, I had Donovan McNabb was my quarterback, Brian Westbrook the running back, Asante Samuel, Brian Dawkins.
Brian Dawkins was on that team.
Few dudes, but the special story. So I was in like my seventh, eighth game, and we was playing in Chicago. This one, Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher, like dogs, like, bro, you know, Brian Urlacher legitimately could be one of the best, you know,
linebackers
to play the game. So we playing versus these dudes, and I'm like, this one of them games where I'm like, damn, I'm really playing versus some dudes that could damn near kill me if I run across the middle, right? So I score. Touchdown, I'm balling in the game. So it become a point where they punted the ball, and I'm back punting the ball. And I had, like, clown and had the ball in one hand. I fumbled, but we end up getting the ball back. Well, I must have came to the sideline. Brian Dawkins must have grabbed me up, snatched me up. You do that shit again. Because, you know, he didn't really cuss.
Yeah,
he was all about God, and like, but he came at you on a crazy way. Yelling at me, if you do that again, I'm like, man, this nigga talking to me like my daddy. Well, I was spooked. I'm like, man, I ain't messing with that dude, but he got on me. But it was just the respect, bro. Like, you got real OGs. When you messing up and you doing wrong, they gonna correct
you.
You get what I'm saying? But yeah, that's what installed in greatness in me. You know,
guys like him can do that though, because you know he out there about to die to win the game.
He putting his body, everything.
He
on the
doing
line,
everything.
Bro. He literally, legitimately popping his neck out of socket, shoulder. I done seen him like crazy. Like he really was Weapon X on the field. He wasn't Brian Dawkins. Like he turned into Weapon X on the field. Like he had a Brian Dawkins locker room and he had a Weapon X locker room. And the Weapon X locker room had all the X-Men and all these characters in there. When he went on the field,
he was
Weapon.
Oh, he really had a locker,
bro,
like that?
Yes, bro. He had two lockers, bro. Like, wow. I'm telling you, bro. He was a special dude, bro.
He one of the best though.
Hell yeah.
Like, bro.
What was your welcome to the NFL moment? That one moment that you was like, damn, I'm here. I'm really here. Off the block, I'm here.
I think London Fletcher, man. So we was playing, I think it was early in the season, rookie year. I think probably, I want to say the second or third game. London Fletcher was a linebacker for the, back then there was the Redskins, Washington Redskins. And I had caught like a little 5-yard quick little route, and I was right over the like the middle of the field. Like, look, guys my size, we don't really like to go around that area.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was like a little 5-yard pass. Donovan McNabb like hit me. I caught the ball, and all I remember was like walking to the sideline, and everything was just like spinning. I'm like, I was out for the rest of the game. I ain't go back in the game. End up having like a concussion, but I'm like, buddy, smacked me. He like
he caught you good.
He had me like I ain't know where I was at. I ain't even gonna lie, but yeah, that was one of the moments.
In London, he's a big dude.
Big dude, bro. And he was small, but he was like a stocky big
shit,
dude for
yeah.
a linebacker. That's
yeah.
like he's like stocky, a bowling ball.
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
Like,
all muscle.
All yeah. I seen, you know how the little video, you got the birds.
The Tweety birds.
Yeah, Tweety birds. I'm like, where am I at?
Talk about the game against my Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
Nah, don't do that. Why you going to do that, man?
You almost got your first touchdown.
Why you talking about that one?
When you dropped the ball too early, feeling yourself.
Yeah, so I'm going to let you have that one, but I'm going to come back. I'm going to speak on that momentarily, and I'm gonna come back and hurt your heart with something too. But,
I remember, I know what you're gonna
do. You know, I was young, man. I was rookie year, just at that moment of time. I'm gonna give y'all a philosophy. So for me, growing up playing sports, you're not really able to allow to clown and dance and do all this crazy shit. So once you get to the NFL, they allow you to, you know, have a little extra fun and do some crazy shit. So for me, I can remember that night before the game. I'm like, if I score, I'm just going crazy. Like, I don't care about nothing. I'm getting in the end zone. I'm dancing. I'm doing every dance. I'm trying to just go crazy and have fun. Monday night football or Sunday, whatever it was, we was the primetime game.
Right.
So once I caught the ball, I'm damn near close to end zone. I'm like, I don't even care about this ball no more. Nigga, I'm finna get in this end zone and dance, bro. So that was just on my mind. So obviously, dropped the ball a little short. But yeah, that's something that happened. It ain't happened again since then. And I did it in high school too, but you know, the one in high school, I was trying to beat the record. Reggie Bush jumped from like the 5-yard line in the game versus the Bruins, and he flipped in the end zone. So I'm in the All-Star game. I'm like, you know, he jumped from the 5. Let me try to jump from the 6. So I try to jump from the 6. And when I got in the air, nigga, I'm like, oh shit, I'm finna bust my ass. And I just dropped the ball because I was bracing the impact of how far I tried to jump, like a bonehead ass shit. But yeah, you know, that happened. I learned from the lid, but it ain't gonna happen again. But yeah, let's talk about that 91-yard touchdown that Michael Vick threw to me on the sideline when I was back in the end zone. Them cowboys.
Yeah, you turned around on us.
Yeah,
turned
man.
Around us. I remember that. That was hurtful.
Or
that
the hurtful. The punt return, right?
The punt return was versus Giants.
Giants.
I got some plays versus the Cowboys though. I literally back in my early days when I was in Philadelphia, man. I looked at myself as a Giant killer, a Cowboy killer.
Yeah, you killed us.
I killed the Redskins too, but it was just like it was something personal because I know the rivals, like being an Eagle, the rivals with the Cowboys, heavy. The Giant, like it's real, bro. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of good years, man, on them.
You got to taste the playoffs in 08. What was your first playoff experience like?
Man, the game moved way faster, man. It was like things was moving. Like, you know, being a rookie, adjusting to my rookie season, I'm like, you know what, it's fast, but the playoffs, bro, it moved like, and I'm talking about the first playoff game, like the wild card game, bro, it was like, you would just think everybody just turned up like 20 notches more, and it's like, I don't know why. I guess everybody trying to win the Super Bowl, but it was just like the game was just moving faster, bro. And for me, I just feel like we went on like every game was away. Like we first game we played, it was in
Minnesota, right?
In Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Then we played
the Giants.
Was it? I don't remember. We played one more, and then we went to Arizona.
In the NFC Championship.
But yeah, every game was on the road, and it was just like for us to not have that home field advantage. Like, you know, playing on the road, it's tough. But that's what builds character, you know? Like, what you going to do when everything's against you? All adversity, all odds are against you. So, for me, I just love silence in the crowd, bro. It's nothing like you going to somebody else's house and standing on their couch and doing whatever the hell you want, walking out saying, we won. Mm. Like, what better feeling is that?
Working with Donovan McNabb, what was that like?
Man, Donovan, man, you know, Donovan was an interesting dude, man. Like, you know,
because you hear, not to cut you off, you hear a bunch of shit how him and T.O. still to this day don't get along. So I always wonder what he was like.
T.O. said he want to scrap.
Yeah,
straight up.
It's real. They had a real personal situation, and I could kind of understand it, you know, with the sense of, you know, I never really try to talk about people, put people down, but it was just like he was more like on some selfish, like he was about himself type shit, you know, like. You could tell, like, with certain quarterbacks, when you're the quarterback and you're the vocal point, like, sometimes you might have to just take it on your shoulder. Like, my bad. I missed that throw. Or my bad. Like, just as a captain and
the
a leader.
The betterment for the team.
You get what I'm saying? And it was just, like, certain times he didn't really want to take that up on him, you know? And not to say he wasn't a good player or a good person, but it was just, like, certain times you could tell it was a little more selfish, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, as a young dude, you really – You're not looking for your quarterback to be that. You're looking for your quarterback to embrace you and really uplift you, you know? So I could kind of see why him and T.O. is how they are, you know?
Andy Reid, what'd you learn from him?
Man, father figure, man. Andy Reid, for me, was like really like a second father, man. And, you know, a special story about that was, like I said, when I first got drafted, you know, Jeff Tefford told Andy Reid, you know, some hurtful things for me because, you know, for me, I know how my dad was, you know, heavily involved and, you know, how he used to go off on my coaches. But I knew it was always coming from a good place in the heart.
Because he loved
you so
much.
At the end of the day, that's his son.
Right.
He wanted his son to be the best and, you know, he wanted him to do the best. So, you know, for me to hear what Jeff Tefford told my dad, you know, on draft day, because right when they drafted me, he got on the phone and was like, basically, we don't want your dad to be no issue. We heard about woo-woo. Like, he was basically saying all the shit that he heard that my pops was doing in college. So, for me... Him and then Andy Reid is from Los Angeles too, so he grew up in Los Angeles. So he knows the young kid coming from LA, he knows the temptation and how it is growing up. But he just respected me. Like, he was like, you know, I know how it is for you. I know what your dad meant for you, but he was just like, you know, he was there for me. And he was one of them coaches where he didn't really care if he was being too hard. Like, you know, you had them coaches where you like, he hard on me, but it's only for the best. It's only for the betterment in me and my career and my life. So you could respect that a little more, you know, and he was really like, you know, a father figure in my life.
What's up?
It's a big difference between being on you and critiquing you and actually knowing that they care about you.
Yeah.
I know I've been through that situation too, playing where a coach is being a dick and mad at me because, you know, his wife being friendly to me or something like that. You know what
Damn,
I'm saying?
Not the wife.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying. Whoa. I'm just saying. It was a situation like that. For real, I ain't going to say nobody names, but I was young at the time.
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying?
You can't help she looking in the mirror
but she knew I was young. And yeah. She was like a mother, like, because my mother wasn't around. I was there young. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean? And he basically used that against me after I made the rookie All-Star game and didn't play me the whole second half of the season.
Was this before or after you kissed her in the mouth?
Neither.
Oh, okay. Neither.
So you got to be prepared for Matt's question.
For real.
He said after I kissed her in the mouth. You're an asshole, dog.
2009, your father passes. What is it like? I had a situation with Golden State, and that's when me and Jack became really close. The beginning of the season, my mom died of cancer, died within 26 days. Trying to play through the season, that whole shit was fucked up. Yeah. What was it like for you, being that your father was so integral mm-hmm. in your development and becoming a man, and pretty much right when you get to the league, you lose him?
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, that was a tough... That was a tough part of my life. I was 20 years old. Like you said, everything my dad meant to me, for me, did for me, right. You know, the relationships, the bonds we built together. You know, it was one of them things where I'm like, that's my first year in my NFL career. Like everything we planned, everything we dreamed about, envisioned, like all the shit we talked about, we was gonna be doing. Like my dad was one of them, was like, he about to have all these monies, millions. I'm finna have all these women. I'm about to move.
He was with driving the shit. Cars, was with the shit too.
Jury, right. And like traveling. Right. Like it wasn't nothing you can't do.
Right.
So for me, it was just everything he envisioned. But to see how Pops went out like that, man, like it was hurtful, man. So we was actually, I want to say like October, November. So during the season, it's early before the playoffs. So he just, you know, Pops like, shit, you got a mansion. I'm coming out to the mansion. I'm staying with you. I'm chilling. Like, you know, I'm driving your cars. Like, Pops was really like, he was like my brother.
One of the homies.
Like, you know, like we had a great relationship. So during the season, I remember he came out there and stayed with me during the season. And he kind of like just got sick out of nowhere. Like, he had diabetes. So, like, he used to always kind of like blame it on the diabetes. Like, I just check him when I go back home. Like, mm-hmm. I'm straight. And it kind of like became normal where he was like sleeping all day, wasn't really eating, and it was like, this was like right around when we was about to make the playoffs. And then I remember my older brother, I think my sister came to Philly and flew him back to LA, and then you know, he went to the doctor and they basically diagnosed him with pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And when they diagnosed him with it was stage 4, you know, it was like too late. They basically gave him like 4 to 5 months to live. And this was at the period of time where I was in the playoffs, so I'm playing right. games, like I'm at the highest of my highest, rookie season, balling, like killing, like, you know, top of the world, like, and can't nothing else go wrong. And, you know, at the same time, you know, for me to be losing my pops in the hospital and him struggling, I remember him watching the games and shit, like my brother there filming him, I'm on the TV, and he just everything, you know, that just kind of meant to me, bro. So it was tough, man. That shit was, you know, still to this day.
Yeah, rest in peace to Pop. Yeah, and people don't understand, because they think because we're athletes or we're on a different stage that we're not affected by anything.
No,
and
definitely.
It is the furthest from the truth. You know what I mean? To try to play with that kind of heavy heart or, yeah. with, you know, the second you're not in action, your mind is there instantly.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? So it's rest in peace to Pops for sure, man. You know he's looking down and proud of you.
That's as athletes, people think, you know, expect us to be so strong and be able to take all that type of stuff. But my father I didn't have a relationship growing up with my father like you.
Yeah.
But it grew as I got older and became successful.
Right.
My father's dead as well. I miss my father. So I can imagine.
For sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Being able to be raised by him, taught by him right or wrong and all that, and to get to where you want to be because of him,
exactly.
and not be able to enjoy it fully with him, man. I can imagine that, bro, because I didn't grow up, but just the fact that I made it and I was able to share a little bit of success with my father, it kills me now,
yeah.
the man I am today, that I can't share that with him. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah. I think that's the most hurtful, like you said, just the moments, and you just know that what we doing it for, like our why. You know, we always talk about the why, like what's your why? What are you doing it for? Is it your mother, your kids? One of your homeboys you grew up with, your granny, you know, it's like everybody got that why. So within that why, it's like, that's what I'm doing it for. And for me, that was what I was doing it for. You know, it wasn't like he was the only reason, but, you know, he installed who I am today. Like, without him, I wouldn't be sitting right here hollering at y'all. Right. That's just not to say my mom and other people didn't play their parts, but you know, he take a lot of that.
Rest in peace, Pops. Yep. December 19, 2010, the only game-winning punt return in NFL history. Talk to us about that play and what's going on through your
game. Blouses, bitches.
Hey, look, I'm gonna just say this because I know I got a lot of people that hate me for that play, man. And you know, for me, man, I was just doing what I was supposed to do, man. I was doing my job, as anybody else would say. Shit, I had an opportunity to send the New York Giants home. They punted to me, which I don't know why the hell they would do that anyway. But I mean, yeah, I know that kicker that, or that punter that punted to me right after that game, he got fired. What was his name? Coughlin, whatever his first name was. Coughlin was crazy, throwing his damn...
Oh, Tom Coughlin?
Yeah, Tom Coughlin throwing his clipboard down. But I don't know, man. That play was huge, man.
I didn't think you was going to pick the ball up because you was looking up. I guess you was looking to see where everybody was. I didn't think you was going to pick the ball up because you let it roll for a minute.
Hey, listen, bro. When I tell you, I didn't think they was kicking it in bounds to me. So, of course, when they kicked it in, I'm thinking he finna kick it out the stadium. Yeah. Like, ain't no way it's standing between these white lines. So once I realized it was coming to me, like you said, I wasn't spooked, but I was more surprised. Like, damn, this ball already coming to me. So in the midst of me dropping the ball, I'm trying to already set up what I'm doing before I even got this ball. So as you see, I dropped the ball, went like a couple yards to the right of me. Now I'm looking up, and I'm like, I already knew where the ball was, picked it up, and I kind of already had an envision
of
what I'm doing, hitting it, sticking my foot in the ground, going up. Jason Avant made a killer block, depleted the dude. He out, knocked out. I'm running in the end zone like, man, I was really, honestly, bro, I feel like I was on wings. Like Pops probably picked me up and just flew me into the end zone, bro. That's how crazy.
But the way he looked, though, when the ball was coming, the way you kept looking up,
he was looking at his path where he was headed.
Like you knew you was finna run that motherfucker back.
Hey, man, that's one of them things when you know. When you know, you know, you know. And that's one of them times, bro.
On top of the world. Imagine if we had social media back then.
What? Man, I tell these young dudes all the time, bro, they make these crazy plays and it's like, bro, I would have been so, not to say I ain't big, but I would have been way like crazy more big if they had that shit when I was coming out as a rookie in college. Yeah. What? Like,
I was big.
Yeah, man. Nah, for sure, though.
Is there an art in the punt return? Like, is there a certain mind frame you need to be in?
Shit, is there an art in shooting a three-pointer?
Mm-hmm. Repetition. So how do you get reps at punt returning?
But we also know we're not going to get killed from punt return, though.
Hold on.
That's a great question.
How do you get reps at punt returning? Though.
Man. For me, it ain't. I mean, it's an art in it, but it ain't like you can get better by repetition, like how you said, as a 3-point.
It's one of the things where, first of all, you can't be scared.
You got it or you instinct. Don't. God, it's an instinct. It's instinct. Like a cat.
Because you looking in the air and this that's grown it. Man it's coming like at you full
you
speed.
You damn near got to be a cat, bro.
Yeah.
Like, for me, that's like people ask me, like, how am I so good and how am I so quick and why do I do what I do on the field? It's like, I'm not thinking about it. When I go on the field or when I'm lining up to be receiver and it's a dude guarding me, I don't have no plan in my mind that, oh, I'm about to do this. I react off of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, if you do something, I'm going to react off it. So if you think you shut me down this way, I'm going to react off and go the other way, bro.
Right.
It's like anything. So it's like me, I really feel like I play like a cat. Like, I'm just reacting.
You got counters for everything.
You know what I'm saying? Like, agile. And like, whatever you do, I'm going to react to it, and I'm going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
Counterpunching everything. You swinging this, I'm ducking. Ah. So that's just my mentality, bro. That's why I am who I am.
I'll take the start. Everybody knows, you know, the Ben Simmons situation with, you know, contract negotiations and not reporting and this and that. You had a similar situation like that in 2011. Speak to that and speak to knowing your worth and believing in yourself more than anything.
I think it's important as an athlete, us as athletes first, how we look at ourselves as a business and how we take our mindset of everything we do and we put into our body, if it's, you know, like nutrition, you know, studying longer, taking care of your body, massage, like whatever it is you invest into your body is what you're going to get out of it.
Right.
And I think sometimes us being athletes, people are just assume we just like all these analysts and these people sit back and, you know, critique us for what we are. Like, they don't really understand. We have to invest in ourselves just as well as like the teams, the GMs, the owners. They gonna do what's best for them as an owner. When it's time to give a person money or to cut a person, they don't think about that. But the minute we want to take care of ourselves and put ourselves first, we in trouble or we an asshole or oh he's a bad team. You get what I'm saying? But it's like we just doing what's best for us. So for me, at that point in time, I'm like, y'all been promising me a contract and y'all haven't rewarded me with my contract. So why am I going to continuously put my body on the line, risk getting hurt, injured, I go to practice and I tear anything. And it's like, now my contract is, I'm not worthy of my contract. So for me, I feel like as athletes, when we stand up, what's right for us, we looked at as the bad guy and we're labeled as a cancer. You get what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, you're looking out for the best in yourself. Now, I'm not saying if you already rewarded with the contract and you post a show, it's different. You know, like certain situations, Ben Simmons, certain situations is different. But when you're due for something and you done put that work in and you haven't been rewarded for it.
You want what you deserve.
You got a right to stand up for what you deserve.
Facts. 2012, they end up franchise tagging you, re-signed a 5-year contract north of $50 million. Mm-hmm. How'd that make you feel?
Well, when I got franchised, that was almost like they just did that for me, kind of, get them back in the building.
Shut you up.
Yeah, like we going to give you, because I think that was 1 year for $10 million, which in reality, the 5 years, I would still end up getting the $10 million. So I'm like, all right. I'm gonna come in there, but in my mind, I know I'm not gonna play on this 1 year, $10 million deal, because if I get hurt, then it's still like I don't have no solidity. Mm-hmm. I'm not solidified in my future for the next 3 years.
It's not guaranteed, like no our security. Money.
You get what I'm saying? So for me, it was just like one of the things where they was like, all right, just sign it and come in and let's try to work out a deal. So basically, I kind of knew that. So I signed the franchise, and then, like I wanna say, like a few weeks later, we end up getting the deal done. So it was kind of like, you know, I pat you on my back, you pat me on mine. Like, we going to get this deal. And I took that word, and it actually worked out. But for me, it felt good because I finally got what I was deserving of. And for me at that time, I remember they used to promise me, like, my second, third year, they was promising me they was going to redo my contract. Because back then, Philly was known for getting their players at early and locking them up, like giving them some money earlier and locking them up for later in their career. So for me, I was like, man, it was rewarding, bro. And it was like, you know, all the work I was putting into it, it made me feel good.
Uh, 2014, statistically your best season, your third Pro Bowl selection, and then you were released after everything you would have been through with that team.
Right.
What was that experience like?
He coaching at UCLA right now. You know what I'm talking about. It was personal, man. For me, coming off my best statistic year, I mean, with 83 catches, over 1,300 yards, 9 touchdowns, like you releasing a dude after him being a Pro Bowl receiver, like, what are you doing? Like, in my mind, I'm like, what's going on? And what mind bothering to me was the allegations and the stories they dug up and made up that was like, that was the reason why they released me. Oh, he's a gang member. He hangs out with thugs, criminals. He's you get what I'm saying? I'm like, bro, I have no felons. I have no record. I ain't never been to jail. Like, you saying, you mad at me because I grew up where I grew up and hang out who I hang out with. So for me, it was kind of like a stab in my back, bro. And it was like everything I did for y'all and coming off my best years, like, y'all just come. Like, if y'all didn't want to pay me, just tell me y'all didn't want to pay me. But to try to tarnish my name and who I am.
Crazy.
Like, and then you got other teams looking like, damn, do we want to take a risk on this dude? Problem. Like, is there something that's going to come out? Like, is he about to come out? He going to jail? You get what I'm saying? It was just like, it was a fucked up situation for me, and I took that personal. That's why I did go to Washington. Every time I played the Eagles, I made them regret that decision.
I want to touch on that a little bit because obviously he is the head coach. We're talking about Chip Kelly. He's the head coach of UCLA, and there was a lot of racial allegations swarming around the way he moved and perceived a handful of you guys, some of the better players on the team. You know, can you speak to that a little bit?
When he first came in, it was like you doing something that a professional athlete shouldn't have to, you know, go through. Like, when you first, the head coach, you come in, that's like coming in and telling you a starter, you playing BD, Stack, whoever y'all starting five is, and you got a new head coach to come in and say from the get-go, none of y'all starters. Like, you telling me Pro Bowlers or All-Star player 10 times, whatever, Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, me, all the start, like, no one was a starter. He basically said everybody got to earn their spots. We looking at this dude like, bro, you know who you talking to? Like, bro, we Pro Bowlers. We pay way more than you. Like, you talking about we all basically don't start. So we, like, from that get-go, it was like a shit he came in and was trying to do. Like, we really felt like we was college players. Like, we really felt like he was trying to control us on some college shit. And it was like, bro, we been through that phase already, bro. We professional athletes, and we know what it takes to get it done at a high level. We've been doing this shit. So for me, that shit was kind of personal, bro, just – everything he tried to come do. And, you know, like you said, like you letting go of players this legitimately the best of the best. Me, McCoy, Michael Vicks. Like, bro, if you would have kept that team together, bro, that team could have been special, bro. We could have legitimately won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it was like he broke that team up and brought people in that he wanted to bring in that probably was going, yes, man, him, or listen to every command he wanted. And it was like us, we really felt like we didn't have to do that because we already gained our respect and we were who we were.
Is he pulling the – was he Urban Meyer before Urban Meyer, what Urban's doing in Jacksonville, kind of trying to bring that college?
It ain't going to work, bro.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. His offensive scheme – because we ball. Like, we had, like I said, I had my best stats, statistics from the offensive side of it. But it's the outside. Yeah, it's like the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wanted us to put a heart monitor on going to sleep to see how many hours people slept. Asking professional athletes. Like, we not college, bro.
Yeah.
He asking people to pee in the cup to see how hydrated you is. Like, bro, if you can't come in and perform the best to your ability and you know you're a professional athlete, you getting paid all this money, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So it's like he almost had, like, people on a leash. But it's like... you can't implement that in the professional level, bro.
That's the same thing they said about Urban Meyer.
Yeah, that's not going to work, bro.
Same thing.
It ain't going to work, bro. It's, that's hard to do. You got to, like, the Andy Reid's, the Bill Belichick's, like, the coaches that demand respect but give respect and understand you got a player mentality relationship. Like, if you can't go holler at your head coach, like, you feel like you can't talk to your head coach, how you going to put yourself on the line when it's in game and you got to go on one? How you going to put yourself on the line for your coach if you feel like you can't do the same for you?
Yeah, I ain't riding for you.
You get what I'm saying? Right. So that's just the mentality that I feel like went wrong with him.
What was it like working with Michael Vick? You guys had a special connection.
Man, Michael Vick, I feel like, is one of the best players I didn't ever play with. Mm. Like, we had the most of the most. Like, if I look back and, you know, do all the statistics, like, me and him had some of the biggest plays, like, legitimately so many plays that we could pull up and look, man. And for me, like, growing up, he was an idol to me, you know, one of the first black quarterbacks taken first round, everything he went through. You know, one of his cousins or boys he grew up with ended up snitching on him. He's trying to take care of everybody. He had 100 dudes rolling with him, taking care of everybody, lifestyles. Like, I learned so much from him, you get what I'm saying? Just from me being younger, looking up to him, and being able to have a chance to really sit in the same rooms and have, like, a big bro, little bro relationship. Like, and when we first met, he was like, man, I see a lot of you and me.
Mm.
And it was, when he told me that shit kind of, it fucked me up, because I'm like, damn. Like, why you say that? He was like, you know, I just see all your boys, you doing this, you doing that. Like, I was the same way. But he was like, you need to cut that, because if it really come down to it, they ain't going to have your back.
Mm.
You get what I'm saying? If it come a situation where it's you or them, they going to choose them, you know? And it was like, he really learned, like, betrayal. Like, people really stabbed him in his back for people he took care of, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he kind of, like, taught me that early. So for me, I was able to see, like, you know, let me start cutting back. Let me stop doing, you get what I'm saying? Because everybody love you when you on top and you hand the money and you shopping, you taking sprees. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody love you, but the minute you don't do something for somebody, how they feel about you?
As soon as you say no, the loyalty gone. The loyalty gone.
He ain't shit anyway.
I hope he get hurt. Yeah, I hope he get cut. Right. You get what I'm saying? Just a little shit like that.
But on the field, I mean, one of the best deep balls. I mean, you got a nice deep ball thrower right now in Stafford, but like I said, you and Mike's deep ball connection was on another level.
Nah, Mike Vick. Yeah, as far as now, like, you know, I'm intrigued to see how it's going to work out with me and Matthew Stafford. But right now, yeah, to date, Mike Vick has been the best quarterback I played with. Just as far as the deep ball, the home run ball, throwing the deep passes. Like, his arm was effortless.
He used to throw, looks up, just sling it.
He used to be like this and throw 80 yards. I'm like, how can a man do that and throw the ball? Like, you ain't even doing that.
Yeah.
He doing it. So I'm like, bro, how you throw the ball 80 yards just flicking the wrist?
Mm. March 9th, my birthday, by the way, 2017, you pick yourself up a nice 3-year deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What was it like being out there in Tampa? You had a young Mike Williams or Mike Evans, right?
Yeah, man.
You got
Tampa was,
weapons.
Yeah, Tampa was a cool vibe, man. It was actually my first time. I think I was just turning 30, 31 or whatever it was. And it was like my first time in my career where I could go play in some good weather.
Mm.
I'm like, I'm used to being in the cold, East Coast, Philly, Washington. It was like, I had a chance to go to Florida. So when I first went to Florida, I got out there and Tampa was hot. I ain't used, you know, I'm a Cali dude. I ain't used to that Tampa, Florida.
Humidity.
But when I went out there, 110 degrees, 100% humidity, I'm like, bro, this is going to be brutal. I remember the first game I'm playing in the game. I'm like, if I knew it was gonna be this, I probably wouldn't have signed. Bro, I'm about there. I damn near had a heat stroke, bro. The first game, man, I'm about to die.
I grew up in that.
But no, it was cool, man. It was good vibes. You know, Jameis Winston was there, like you said. We had Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. You know, the team was fine. We really didn't have too many. We had good players, but we didn't play that good. You know, 2 years we went 5-11, mm-hmm. So we never really end up. You know, Jameis kind of struggled a little bit. Me and him really never connected like that, and that's kind of the midst of that story.
It is what it was.
Yeah.
So you head back to Philly. Mm-hmm. Were you reluctant with that situation getting there, or what was your approach heading back to Philly?
So heading back to Philly in 2019, it was honestly at this point Chip Kelly was gone. They had brought a old coach back when I was used to be with Andy Reid. Doug Peterson was the head coach, mm-hmm. So I had like a good relationship with Doug Peterson. So I could remember when I was in Washington, it was like they was trying to figure out ways to get me back. Like literally, like 4 or 5 years, they was trying to get me back because I was killing them so bad. Like every time I played them, it's like, man, we got to figure a way to get this motherfucker back.
Right.
Like Chip Kelly gone. Like let's figure out a way to get him back. So. Was in the talks, you know, not a lot of people supposed to know this, but yeah, you know, we talked here and there. You know how it is when a team wants you and you know they ain't supposed to be hollering at you, but they like, we're going to figure out a way to get your ass back. So it was just one of them things, but the reunion was actually, it was good because, you know, I felt like I really should have never left in the first place,
right.
And it was like the person that really made the decision wasn't there no more. And even though the GM was there and certain people was there, like when Chip Kelly was there, they literally gave him the key to everything. Like he was like the general manager. He was bringing players in. Like it was everything that was him. So I kind of really didn't feel that much of a way towards the owner and the GM. But, you know, they all in it together. You know, right. At the end of the day, they all in it together.
First game back, you break a record to get you in, I think, second place.
Shit.
You surpass Randy Moss. I mean, that's a hell of a name, first and foremost. When you hear yourself, knowing where you come from, what you've been through, the journey you've been on, when you start passing people like Randy Moss and legends of the game like that, what does that mean to you?
I mean, honestly, man, in the midst of it, you know, you feel good about it, but it's still like I ain't done.
Because I got more years.
You get what I'm saying? It's like I still know I got a lot left in the tank. And I feel like I'm continuously still putting on, man. And it's like, as much as I feel like I've arrived or I've accomplished something, like I ain't done yet, bro. So I'm not really content with that because I know I still want to push that bar. I want to push that.
So needle. you ain't sat back and just thought about?
Not really, bro.
Yeah.
I mean,
you see the moment too much.
Moments it be moments here and there that hit me. Like I see something, I'm like, damn, you know. But when you in the midst of it, bro, you really you don't really get too much caught up in it. Because if I sit back and get too much caught up in it, it's gonna take me off my grind. Focus, I don't want to get off. Like I'm still on the needle.
I want to get complacent.
First touchdown with the Rams, you're tied for the most 75-plus yard touchdown. That's fucking crazy to say. 75-yard touchdowns. You tie the record the most. Like, what's that like for you?
That one right there was special. And the reason why I said that one was special because it happened back home. You get what I'm saying? This where I started playing that, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me to come back home, like literally when SoFi Stadium was built was where I played Pop Warner ball at growing up. That soil, all that dirt right there is where I used to play ball at. Being a little hard-headed, snotty-nosed boy, like I was in the backyards playing over there, bro. So for me to come back and score my ninth 75-yard touchdown, like you said, that number is crazy. I ain't even really know about that stat. Mm-hmm. Now that one kind of caught me off guard. I knew about the 50-yarder, the 60-yarder. But when they said 75, that might be hard for anybody to beat right there. Because the last person that had, I think, was like 1941 or something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? So, like I say, man, I'm still in the midst of it. I can't get content, bro. Maybe one day we'll sit back and, you know, do what we do and talk about it. But as of right now, you're
still going.
I'm still on it.
I can dig it. Toughest defenses that come to mind, a couple defenses that come to mind over throughout your 13-plus year career.
I would probably have to say I've had to go back to the early days, like my rookie year. I would probably say like the Pittsburgh Steelers, Troy Polamalu, Joey Porter, Harrison.
Harrison, yeah.
What's his name?
James Harrison.
James Harrison.
Could still bench press a house.
That defense was crazy. Casey Hayward. Oh, I can't forget about Ed Reed and Ray Lewis.
Baltimore.
It was cold. Baltimore was cold back then, too. It was something about that AFC back then.
Townsend.
Yeah, Townsend. Yeah, they had a corner too. I can't even remember his name, but yeah, they were, them two defenses was cold back then.
Off the field, you were part of the Tupac All Eyes on Me project with our man LT Hutton.
I didn't know
LT.
That, bro.
You know that? I had a little cameo in there.
Yeah, I know. I saw the cameo, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, behind the scenes with our man LT. Talk to us how that came about and some of the other business stuff you're interested in off the field.
Shit, so, I mean, the LT situation, obviously, you know, LT, just the relationship with, you know, Snoop and, you know, since I've been a young kid back and going to high school, college, you know, I used to always just be around them, hanging out with them. So, you know, me and LT kind of, you know, just genuinely, you know, built a relationship where I knew he was in the music industry. You know, I was dealing with some music stuff. You know, I got a record label he was kind of helping me on. And, you know, LT used to always be like, you know, I know you love this music shit, but he was like, this movie stuff is where you need to put your money at. He's like, I could guarantee you get your money back on the movie. He said, the music, I can't guarantee you come back your money back on the music. But he said, this movie, I could guarantee that. So, you know, we came together and, you know, I invested in the Tupac film. And, you know, he had the company called The Program Pictures where, you know, he had like a lot of projects, you know, that he was working on. But, yeah, the Tupac, you know, growing up, I'm a diehard. Tupac is one of my favorite. Mm-hmm. He on the wall, ain't he up here? Mm-hmm.
What? Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah,
you know, Tupac was one of my favorites, you know, getting through when I was young and just hearing gunshots and just living in the hood. Like, I just throw Tupac on and he would help, you know, relieve like certain mm-hmm. situations I went through. So that being able to have a piece in that Tupac movie, that's legendary for me. Right. That's like one of my goals. Like you say a pet peeve or something you on your bucket list that you gotta have before you die. Like that's one of them things to being connected with something that had to do with Tupac.
Well, being a producer in his movie, that's bigger than having a part in it.
Yeah, nah, you're right. And then for that to be saying like that, yeah, that was crazy, that's bro, huge. For me to even be a part of
congrats
that.
Congrats on that, bro. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You have a weekly podcast, Fade the Booth. Talk to us about that. You put a couple episodes out. You got some in the bank. What were you trying to get across with that?
So Fade the Booth, man. So I got hurt. I want to say I got hurt about like in 2019, and I had like a groin injury surgery, and I was out for the season. So I'm sitting back. I'm like, man, year 12. I'm like, man, I can't play football forever. Like, let me figure out something I can, you know, do where it's like fun and it ain't hard for me. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sitting back thinking, I'm like, you know, my brother always had a camera on my face, had documentaries. He's still shooting.
Shout out to bro right there with the camera on. Yeah,
you know, he's shooting now. But I'm like, man, I was always, you know, in front of a camera. And it's like, this shit is easy to me, bro. So I'm like, let me, you know, bring people. And then y'all too, y'all inspired it. You know, Giddy the Kid, Wallow, like, you know, seeing young brothers kind of doing their thing. And I'm sitting back like, you know, let me get into the podcast industry. And for me, I just really wanted to open up and, you know, give, you know, my platform and, you know, my viewers just the inside to me, you know, and not only me, but, you know, my guests. You know, I had Lil Wayne come on, had, you know, Marshawn Lynch, Michael Vick, Michael Rubin, just give them a different perspective. You know, like I had an owner on here, like a billionaire owner, just talking about like lifestyle things, like what made him who he was at an early, because he was 20 years old, 13 years old, had a billionaire mentality, you know, people invested in him. You know, him taking out money, like things that me being 12 years old, I wouldn't have thought about.
Right.
Like how his mind was programmed. Like, so it's just for me just opening up and talking about situations that people could sit back and know that, like, we all might be celebrities. We all might be who we are, but we still went through shit that it was that defining point in our life. Like, you know, so for me to Fade the Booth is really just letting people know it's possible to make it. Like, everybody that's successful, we go through some. And I know a lot of people be sitting back at home like, oh, I tried this and it didn't work, so let me give up. No, like, keep going. Like, figure out what it is you want to do. So, for me, I love inspiring, man. So, Fade the Booth is really just inspiring, man.
Where can they find that at?
So, Fade the Booth, you can find it on IG. Then, you know, it's on, you know, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes. You know the whole thing.
Shout out Wallow and Gilly, too, man. That's family. Shout out
to the boys. Yeah, they've been wild. I love for y'all to come on mine, too. Yeah. You know?
We waiting on you. Waiting on the invite.
We there.
We got to cross-promote it, man, for sure.
Fatherhood. You got two little guys. Yep. How important is that to you?
Man, fatherhood, man, it's huge to me. I look at fatherhood as, you know, what do I want my kids to hear about me when they grow up and they become older, you know, what are people going to say about their dads, you know? Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm a stand-up dude. I'm a respectful dude. You know, I'm a hard-working dude. And, you know, I just want them to know that, you know, they pops is a real one, you know, and they got something to look up to. Dope. But at the end of the day, my kids gonna be real ones. They might not grow up and live how I live, but I'm gonna install that and have them understanding, like, you know, you gotta work for what you want out here, you know. So I think being a father for me kind of, you know, let me know it's not all about myself. You know, before you have kids, you put yourself first. And it's like, now that I have kids, I'm not first anymore. My kids are first, you know. So that's how I look at it.
Quick hitters, final stretch. First thing to come to mind, let us know, top five receivers of all time.
Top five receivers of all time. So I'm gonna go Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Michael Irvin, Steve Smith, Calvin Johnson.
Woo! That's a hell of a five right there.
I'm up there. I ain't put me in there, but I'm up there too.
Yeah, nah, that's dope. Top three artists or songs on rotation on game day.
Top three artists.
Our songs.
I got Nipsey for sure. Nipsey Hussle on there. Tupac, All Eyes on Me. Third one probably would be, I like the Young Jeezy.
I was thinking about you say Jeezy. I was like, why'd you say Jeezy?
Old Young Jeezy, man. Yeah, the old school
Snowman.
Young Jeezy. The Snowman, 103.
Motivation.
Motivation 101.
Yeah.
Gotta be on there for sure.
If you can go back and relive one moment in your career, high school, college, NFL, up to this point, what would it be?
Man, high school, bro. I would probably say if I could rewind time, man, I would want to go back to my high school days, man. I used to really have so much fun in high school. Mm. Being like a junior, senior, having all them scholarships, offers, being a dude, you know, back then I had a car. Like, you know, we used to just, you ain't had no
warrants.
You
free.
You ain't had
carefree.
Shit. I ain't got no bills. Them moms give me a little money here and there. I'm going hanging with the homies. We hanging out, hanging with, ain't no telling what we was doing, man. I used to have fun, but I think about now, I'm 34, I'm like, damn, where all the time go? But it's like, if you could relive it, like high school was probably some good moments for me.
Hell yeah, that shit was a blast.
top three favorite NBA players to watch?
Top three, obviously number one.
Bron.
Hell no, Kobe Bryant.
Kobe, he from LA.
Mamba, you know, I argue with a lot of these dudes on this Kobe Bryant thing, man, because I feel like, don't get me wrong, LeBron is a freak of nature. Like, he's really one-on-one, but he don't got that killer instinct.
I say the same thing.
Yeah, he don't got that dog in him. Like, it's times where he done took over and he done did his thing, but
he got dog, it just ain't the Kobe dog.
A lot of times he passing the ball. Like, I don't want, if you the dog, you the man, two, 3 minutes, I don't want to see you passing, you taking over.
Yeah.
It's just for me, I know Kobe gonna take over. He might shoot that motherfucker 100 times, but he gonna make about 50 of them.
Yeah.
But nice. So Kobe, AI.
Mm.
Chuck.
And my third would probably be I like Dame, man.
Yeah, Dame.
Mm. Good Dame pick. Time, what he do?
Yeah, Dame time.
Dame time.
Dope.
Five dinner guests, dead or alive.
Five dinner guests?
Mm-hmm. Chopping it up about life.
I would have liked to do Pac. Shit. Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
I say Elon Musk, Beyonce, and probably last one I'll probably go with
Last seat.
Who can I say?
Throw a comedian in there. You might want to laugh a little bit.
Shit, Dave Chappelle, he on the hot seat right now.
To be honest, it ain't even hot.
It ain't
hot. They killing
it
right now.
They tried to. They saw Netflix rolling with them. They suspended motherfuckers who had something to say. Yeah. I wish you motherfucking would.
Right. They stood their ground. I love it.
Last question.
The GOAT. Okay. This last question is, remember, your answer, you got to help us get your answer on the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to see on All the Smoke?
He gonna throw that out. Mike Vick, that's easy, man. He gonna do that without it. That's easy. Bron been on it already.
I just ran into Bron last night at Westbrook's. They had the premiere last night. I seen Bron. I said, bro, it's time. It's season three. He's like, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Bron, I think Bron will be.
Everybody
that's
waiting.
That's reachable for y'all. But you know, y'all can't do it.
What's the good thing about it though? It's a lot of podcasts and a lot of shows, but everybody waiting for him to sit on that couch.
No question.
Hey, y'all, you know what I'm saying? They waiting for him to sit on that couch.
If anybody can do it, y'all can do it. I mean, come on, man. Come on, bro. Y'all can do it.
Waiting on you, bro.
Yes, sir.
Well, man, that's a wrap for Sean Jackson, Los Angeles Ram, LA's finest. You guessed us on Showtime Basketball, YouTube, and the iHeart platform, Black Effects. See y'all next week.
Salute.
Peace.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.